On today's show, do the Cavs have real depth? We're going to talk about that and more on today's show. Thanks for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Today's episode is also brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. That's BetOnline. That's where the game starts. The music you heard on the way in, by the way, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation Through the Sword. My co-host is Evan Damrell, covering the Cavs and the Cleveland sports team at large for Facebook's Write Down Euclid. Producer Jake Stevens is not with us behind the virtual glass, but he is producing and is here in spirit. Evan, are you ready to talk about Cavs depth? Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens, and some of the vets.
First off, I like that you said Jake is gone, but always in our hearts, more or less. But yeah, I'm ready to talk about this. I'm happy to be back. Thanks for Justin Rowan and everyone else for filling in for me. Yeah, to computer issues, just a fun time. Shouts to Chris for holding down the fort, because it stinks when your laptop's keyboard stops working instantaneously. But I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yeah, I was born ready. You know, this is what I'm here to do. Let's start with Dean Wade. We're gonna do Dean Wade segment one, Lamar Stevens segment two, and then some of the vets in segment three, specifically Howell Neto and Robin Lopez, maybe some of the two-way guys in there as well. But to start with Dean Wade, Evan, I was going through his film, looking through some of his numbers, and I just thinking about remembering what he was last year. And I think I just kind of really like Dean Wade. This is a guy that moves and competes well at 6'10". He takes care of the ball. 34% on threes last year, was at 39% the year before. 38% on non-corner threes last year. A weirdly low 24% on corner threes last year, which you suspect will not be the case in his minutes this year. That's just an insanely low number for a guy who is, I think, a pretty solid shooter. 71% at the rim. And I think the most interesting part of this is that he really last year, maybe this is due to personnel, maybe this is due to just what his game is, but he was most effective as a small forward. He played about 1,200 possessions as a small forward, plus 6.6 per 100 possessions. Those lineups had an offensive rating of 109.9, a defensive rating of 103.3. Garland, Okoro, Wade, Mobley Allen. So basically one of the starting lineup variants with Wade in the marketing role. 218 possessions, plus 12.8 per 100 possessions, giving up an astounding 99.5 points per 100 possessions, 118.8 offensive rating. Comparatively at center, or when he's playing power forward, 617 possessions in total. Those lineups are on average minus 4.5 per 100 possessions. Those lineups, Evan, are very scattershot in terms of personnel. Ed Davis was his most common center when Dean Wade is playing the four, which is not what you'd suspect would optimally be the case if you're going to play Dean Wade at the four. But he is kind of like almost more Lowry Markkanen in thinking about him than he is a Kevin Love, break glass, cage for Burton.
Yeah, you can kind of see the thought process and what the Cavs are trying to accomplish. And Dean Wade shared this with the media several points during the season last year, before he was out for the season with a torn meniscus, that he's still kind of learning on the fly how to play small forward after playing the four and some five at Kansas State and in high school and everything else, because that's just kind of where he is. But like you said, he's played pretty well, especially in spot starts for the Cavs. And I think when you mentioned the Ed Davis statistic, I think that really puts into perspective how beat up and maybe COVID-riddled this Cavs team was at times last season, too, where you're kind of asking those guys to play legitimate minutes for you in lineups. And, like, no disrespect to either of them, but there's a reason why Dean Wade is kind of like a break glass in case of emergency type of option for the Cavs. But I think Cleveland transforming him into a three is an interesting way to develop him. I think we'll talk about this a little bit more as well with Lamar Stevens, because Lamar said outright during his exit interview that the Cavs want him to become even more comfortable with playing the three. And when it comes to Wade, though, like, he's kind of Stevens foil, where he's somewhat solid defensively, like at least positionally. Like, he's not going to get completely annihilated by his man, but he's also a four learning how to play the three, so there's going to be some issues with that. But I think having like Mobley and Allen or one of those defensive juggernauts behind him really mitigates the risk that you have of playing Dean Wade at the three. But the three-point shooting is super encouraging. I think he maximized his minutes and his potential with the Cavs whenever he did play, and I think it's just a fun story, and it made a lot of sense when the Cavs picked up his option, or exercised his option rather, early into the offseason, kind of prior before things really got rolling, just because he is one of those undrafted free agents the Cavs nabbed up. Ditto for Lamar Stevens, kind of developed him really well with the Charge. He has just become a guy where, like, he's not going to be playing on a night-to-night basis. He's not going to be your starting three, obviously, but if something were to happen to Markkanen, or if the Cavs were to give some guys the night off, like if you said, hey, Dean, we need you to play 10, 15, possibly 20 minutes, depending on how the night goes, he's not going to be overwhelmed by the moment. I think that's a good thing, and I think that's something you and I have advocated for, golly, almost the entire time I've been on the show with you. The Cavs utilizing the G League and just other avenues like that to develop that back-end rotation talent so that 1 through 15, every guy is viable on your roster and just kind of playable in that sense, too.
Yeah, I think there is a little something in what we saw last year that makes me wonder, Evan, how much he is maybe more suited to be like a really weirdly big wing that has like defensive support versus like being an actual four. Like, so he is 6'10", but he's a little, he not a particularly strong rebounder on the defensive end last year, pretty active on the offensive end. Some of that I think could just be the situation, but I think if I'm looking at the Cavs depth pieces, and I think great, even coming off the meniscus and he had the injury issues in college, which is what kept him really from being drafted in the first place. He was considered, I think, a top 60 guy in that class by a lot of people, but the injury issues and his age kind of put people off. This is a depth piece. This is not a guy you necessarily, I think, plan on being like a maybe consistent part of your rotation. I think maybe as you go forward, if you move on from certain guys and he's like your cost-controlled replacement, if he signs a new contract or something, I think that can make some sense as your other guys are more expensive. But I think for what he is right now, I think a good depth piece, still pretty young for in his career, has a skill set that makes sense with your kind of big pieces. And I think if we're looking at this year, I'm curious to see, like, okay, like, where does he slot into this? Does he, you know, do you use him to kind of maybe mark in a place of the more forced nights? Kevin Love gets a night off. Maybe he's filling in for a couple games just to kind of fill in if someone has an ankle injury or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he is exactly perfectly suited for that this year. And if it evolves into something more over time, that can make sense. Do you have any kind of final, is there anything about Wade that you're kind of, that, because we've been very positive about him, I think, just to end this, is there anything about him that you feel that you're that kind of concerns you in what he provides?
Well, the reason he went undrafted at Kansas State was due to foot injuries.
Yep.
But he did tear his meniscus last year, like I kind of noted towards the top of my just riff on him. I think just monitoring his health and just kind of where he's at in terms of his recovery, we haven't really gotten any updates on it. I saw through Chris Fedor that the Cavs are hosting a player-led training camp in Los Angeles. I didn't read it too deeply, so I don't know if Wade will be there or not. I know Sexton won't be. But we just kind of got to see where Wade is in his recovery as well, and the player he will be after, you know, the meniscal tear and just the surgical procedure and everything else, because I know with modern medicine there's a little less worry about it. Just with a guy who has an injury history to begin with, who is more so, like you said, 6'10", kind of a traditional big, kind of being not forced but maximize to play the three in Cleveland, just because it kind of fits their ethos as an organization. And just, you know, keep an eye on that. Maybe make sure he's fully healthy. Make sure he's fully together. And so, like, when the time comes, like, when you need to lean on him, are you going to get the same results as last season? Or maybe not an abbreviated version, but say maybe something that's like 95% or 90% of that, just because there is some injury concern there.
Yeah, I think if he's going to play the three, he's also not as, like, he doesn't provide you the same frame size as, like, a Markkanen does. I think he has a little bit more hops in his game than Markkanen does, but defensively, he's not as big. And I think that if you're going to bear this out over the course of a full season, I think some of that with him would be maybe where you see some of the issues. I would kind of want to see how they would handle some of that in a bigger sample and in a bigger run. I also just think, like, rebounding-wise, this is the issue Markkanen has. If you're that big and you're not rebounding on the defensive end a lot, yes, you can compensate by that because you have Mobley and Allen, who are good rebounders. You have some guys on the wing who like to crash the glass and stuff. But like I think a little, and Kevin Love, if as long as he's around, is remained a very, very good defensive rebounder. And some of this, I will say, is probably positioning. It's Dean Wade being on the wing and having to crash in. But I think there is something to, like, okay, can Dean Wade increase his rebounding? Can he be a little more physical? Can he be a little bigger in how he plays to kind of accentuate some of the stuff that they would need him to do as kind of a 3-4 combo, guard up a little bit, provide some defensive rebounding? Because it's like, the guy we're going to talk about in the next segment, I weirdly think of Lamar Stevens as almost like the bigger, bulkier option of the two, but he's 6'6". Dean Wade is 6'10". But yeah. I think of Lamar as almost like the bigger, thicker dude of these two.
That's why I kind of call Dean Wade Lamar Stevens foil, just because they are quality depth pieces, but they are somewhat different in what they provide you, even though they kind of fill that emergency depth at the 3 and the 4.
Yes. All right. After the break, let's get into Lamar Stevens, who has just been pretty solid depth, but also has a big weakness in his game that we'll get into. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in and all your betting needs. Find all of your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every single league, including Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for your sports wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. For instance, the Cavs are minus 125 to finish with fewer than 43 wins and are minus 105 to finish with more than 43 wins. The Cavs title odds, if you're feeling frisky, are +1,200, +500. So, maybe that's a little long shot, but you could do it. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, back here on Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damrell. Let's go into Lamar Stevens. Evan, when I think of Lamar Stevens, I think of two things. Number one, I think he's their best option to defend up on threes and four. 6'6", 220, very strong, covers a ton of ground on defense, can defend wings and quicker guys at his size. He's not really a point of attack guy necessarily, but a very competent, strong wing defender. The problem is that he is not a particularly useful offensive player, and that limits kind of what he's been. And there's like videos we've seen of him shooting this summer where it looks better and all this stuff. We need to see him as a shooter. And we'll see if that ever can manifest itself in a way where he can become a more regular player with a more dependable jump shot.
Yeah, it's not the Isaac Okoro question, but it is a similar question to have with Lamar Stevens, where you have concerns maybe about his inability to kind of hit from three-point range, but you knew that out of Penn State. And I thought when you were saying two things you thought of, I was waiting for you to mention friend of the pod, Bill DiFilippo, as one of the options that makes you think of Lamar Stevens. But either way, Lamar Stevens is an interesting player. I think the Cavs just mentioned, like, he's like one of Penn State's all-time leading scorers. Like, he does have an acumen, he has a bit of a pedigree, like, and a bit of an interesting story where he had to climb up the ranks. And I talked to them a little bit just about it, where he's perfectly comfortable with not getting minutes. And I think he provides you, when he does play, like you said, high energy on the defensive side of the ball. But there's legitimate concerns on offense. And you saw during summer league when he was playing, back when Isaac Okoro was playing point guard as well, there was times that the Cavs had Stevens initiate the set as a small forward, and he totally looked out of his element doing that. But there might be something there. And like you said, yes, he's shooting shots in an open gym with no one really defending him. We need to see it in an actual NBA scenario. We need to see it where he gets consistent minutes in the rotation. I think he's kind of, him and Dean Wade both are kind of the odd men out in this rotation, irregardless of who is or isn't available just to start the season. I think it's more so we're focusing on Hall and Neto in the third segment is who we'll be really honing in on there. But Stevens is an interesting player. He's very much a JB Bickerstaff type player, I would say, where like he's just tough, he's gritty on defense, and he's just fun. Like, I think he's fun, he plays a lot of energy, and I think the fact that he's such an important locker room piece is an interesting component too, where like he's like a big culture guy as well, and I think that helps his case. But I like Stevens, but I certainly see his limitations and the lack of upside, and he certainly is starting to hit his ceiling as a player, but there might be something there. Maybe he doesn't become like average like we hoped for with Isaac Okoro in terms of 3-point shooting, but maybe he becomes like 25. Like, if we're looking at the scale, like he improves by 20 to 25% in 3-point shooting, that's what I say. Like, okay, yeah, there's a little something here.
Yeah. So last year, 28% on corner threes. That's rough.
Not good.
29% on non-corner threes, also significantly a problem. Good at the rim, which isn't surprising because he's strong and finishes through contact well. 69% nice at the rim last year. Draws fouls. He fouled on 11.2% of his shot attempts for cleaning the glass. Has an and-one rate of 36.1%, which is a huge jump from year one to year two. So we kind of need to see if it holds. I think, Evan, if we're looking at how he fits into this team, he to me is a guy that if you're going to look for someone to play between Markkanen and Mobley or Love and Mobley, I think he makes some sense here. So if you look at Markkanen and Mobley last year, and with Stevens on the floor, plus 4.8 per 100 possessions, offensive rating of 116.7, 111.9. With the other starters, so like him at the two, they were plus 13.5 per 100 possessions. So that's like crazy, and it feels a little insane to me. But like the numbers suggest he is helpful despite the shooting seven. I think if you put him in spots, say between Markkanen and Mobley, where he can be near the rim a little bit easier, he can crash the glass, he can allow Larry Markkanen to maybe defend a different kind of player, and he can handle the better perimeter assignment. There's things he can do that fit some of the weirdness of this Cavs team. And I just also just like his perimeter defense, I think, is generally good. He is so quick for his size that I think even if he's not like locked on the K, it's another guy that Cavs have in the rotation who's really solid. Again, the problem just becomes like, what do you do with him on offense? And it's like, him and Okoro played together sometimes last year, and it kind of worked at times, but, like, do I trust that? No, and I think you have to slot him into these, like, specialty spots, and it's almost, like, easier just because Dean Wade can shoot to imagine a world where, like, Dean Wade is, like, an easy spot starter, depending on who is hurt, just because of the spacing aspect.
So let me ask you in a hypothetical lineup, would you have Mark going to be playing the four in that scenario, or would you have him playing the three of Stevens at the four?
Offensively, he's playing the three. Defensively, he's playing the four.
Or you could possibly have him at the five as well, one.
Markkanen should absolutely never play the five.
I mean,
never should play the five.
Unless it's like the five's not a huge offensive threat, or like you're able to stash him on like a defensive mismatch. But like Stevens is just interesting to me because he can, I wouldn't say reliably defend one through four, maybe a little bit of five. Yes, and defend on the interior, but like on the perimeter, he's pretty rock solid. And he's intriguing. Like if JB Bickerstaff wanted to get real weird with it, like he'd play Okoro, Obagi, and Stevens together. Like the shooting would not really be there unless like Okoro has that huge jump and like Obagi's who you're really leaning on. But between those three, like the perimeter defense would be really hard to score on if you're Cleveland. Like, there's a way to grind teams to dust and maybe try and claw your way back into games if you run lineups like that.
Yeah, and if you want to like take away some of the physical, like if Evan, depending on what Evan Mobley's physicality looks like in year two, and Markkanen is just not a physical player. Like that is not what Markkanen is. He's a pretty limited as far as fours go. And as far as seven-footers go, he's not providing you a ton of stuff. He's not providing you, like, a ton of, like, strength in the interior. And Stevens, at the very least, is going to, like, wall up, put his arms up, and at least give you some resistance there if he's guarding a guy in the post. Like, if you were to tell me, like, okay, trust one of these two guys to support Mobley in the interior, like, Lamar Stevens is the answer there. And, yeah, like, he might get bulldozed by, like, really big guys, but, like, if it's, like, I think Markkanen at times, and Wade, I think, at times as well, are pretty postable, even against certain guys. Like, they are able to get back down a little bit and get shot over because they're just not particularly good interior defenders. Stevens is a little smaller, but he's stronger, and he's very competent in how he's going to defend this. Like, you can't hunt Lamar Stevens in the way that, like, you can maybe, like, hunt Markkanen in the post with certain guys.
Well, the only way you could really exploit Lamar Stevens is if you give him a bit of the Isaac Okoro treatment, where he just kind of drifts. And you force him to drift on the perimeter instead of maybe making his presence felt on the interior. But the physicality aspect is certainly an interesting point. Evan Mobley's development is going to be fascinating to me because, as you smartly pointed out early into this offseason, like, his offensive game is really raw and untapped. And, like, defensively, he has such a solid baseline, so we kind of see where he has to go from here, and like that could unlock a lot of things for Cleveland defensively too. And Stevens can really complement what they want to do because they're a defensive first team. But before we head into the final break in the final segment, if you had to pick between Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens, who would you rather give, like, minutes? Let's just say JB Bickerstaff expands his rotation to 11 players, and he has to pick between Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens, and he calls you because he's a friend of the pod, and he says, Chris, what should I do? What do you tell him to do?
I think it's matchup dependent. I'm gonna cop out and say it's matchup dependent because I think it is. Because I think if I'm playing like the Bucks and you're playing like the physicality of that team and some of the size they can throw at you, I'm weirdly gonna go with Lamar Stevens.
I agree with that. And where would you see a viable path for Dean Wade? Like just like saying, all right, Dean Wade, it's your night. Well, like a team that just isn't overwhelmingly big on the interior.
Or like a team that is just kind of like very perimeter oriented, and you can like do some of your very standard defensive stuff to just like do some switching. I think Stevens, I can just imagine, like, Wade is a cleaner offensive fit. Stevens is the cleaner defensive fit. And I think it is, like, I could see Lamar like thriving in a couple different scenarios. Wade's things are sort of like, does he do what he does on offense and survive enough on defense to kind of work? I have like warmer feelings about like what Lamar Stevens does, even though like the offensive issues are like a very real thing.
You are where I'm at, and that's why I'm not going to cop out, and I'll just say Lamar Stevens. And I also just think, maybe Cleveland has the offensive firepower and personnel with Garland, Love, Markkanen, Mobley, Allen, possibly Sexton as well if he's back, LeVert to maybe supplant some of the offensive deficiencies Lamar Stevens has and just really accentuate and just encourage his defensive potential in some of these lineups. And I think I just go with Stevens. If it's like 5-10 minutes a night like that, I think I'd rather go that path.
The way I would maybe, the situations I would maybe consider it is if, like, you're playing, like, Boston and your offense is, like, just stuck in the mud and you need, like, if you're playing, like, a really good defense, a really good defensive team. So last year, the top five defenses were Boston, Golden State, Phoenix, Miami, and Memphis, according to Cleaning the Glass. If you're playing one of those teams and your offense is just, like, stuck in the mud, that's where Wade, because he can, he will attack some closeouts sometimes, he can space. Like, that's where I'm throwing him at the wall and saying, like, can you provide me something? But if you're playing, like, Chicago, like, I think you can get away with playing Lamar a little bit easier because, like, he can be useful defending, like, DeRozan or Lonzo Ball, and, like, you can make that work well enough. All right, after the break, we're going to talk about the other Cavs depth options, including one of Jetty Osmond or Dylan Windler, how will they tone Robin Lopez, and the two-way guys, Isaiah Mobley and RJ Nembhard. Right back. All right, last segment, Lockdown Cavs. All right, we're going to do this quickly, and we're going to kind of just pop around lightning these guys. Around it. Yeah, lightning round this. Good way to do it. So if I'm picking between Osmond and Windler, I think Osmond is better depth than Windler because Dylan Windler has never proven to have like successful string of NBA things. But I would say this about both of them. Osmond is kind of pricey, and this is absolutely the spot on the roster is those two guys that I would say is like, aside from maybe Neto and Lopez because they're one-year veteran minimums, if you're looking at guys who are still around from a couple years ago and are still moving forward with where the Cavs are at, those are the two guys that are getting turned over on this roster. They're absolutely the guys you're assuming they're replacing in probably a year.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think to expand upon your point a little bit, if I had to pick between Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens or Dylan Windler and Jetty Osmond, I'd pick the Wade and Stevens tandem just because they're a little bit more reliable because Jetty just isn't good defensively. I think he's so hit or miss sometimes as a three-point shooter that you can't rely on him. Like you said, Windler just hasn't put a consecutive string of games together in the NBA to say, okay, there is something here, and it's just unfortunate because I think there was the potential there. But just the injuries and the lack of development and everything else just going against Dylan's just kind of like made that ship set sail, whether he had a choice in it or not. But that's just kind of where I'm at too. And I think, yeah, if you are turning over this roster, especially if you want to bring Colin Sexton back, you are kind of the vultures are circling on Jetty and Windler's camp at this point.
Yeah, even if like one of, I think even if like whoever is on the roster to start the year, like if that ends up going that way, like if one of them is dealt in like some kind of multi-team trade or whatever, like remember Jetty Osmond has technically 2 years left in his contract, one is not guaranteed. Dylan Windler had his last option picked up. Like I can't imagine there's like they're gonna run that out another year unless he has like a year where it's just like holy Dylan Windler has like figured it out.
Yeah,
and like he shoots well, and like you just, it's like cheap wing depth or something. Like I could see that, like a Kobe Altman special where it's like, hey Dylan, you were fine enough this year, let's do like 4 years with like three non-guaranteed years baked into them. Like that's the structure it would almost have to be.
Yeah, that's what it had to be. And in terms of just moving players, Jake Fisher did share on his podcast, which I am aggregating him right now. The Wolves have called a few times about Jetty,
his,
so maybe that's
his podcast that is called Don't Aggregate This.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Wolves have called a few times about Jetty, according to him. So we'll see what happens with that. Maybe that's just a path for the Cavs to kind of get out of some financial wiggles as well, because Jetty's making a lot more money than Wendler, too. Wendler's a lot easier to pallet if you want to keep him on this roster and keep him on the back end of the rotation and then maybe flip him later, or like you said, just give him the Kobe Altman special, and then he will say he is the bulldog of this team. But lightning is struck. Let's move on to the one-year veterans.
So I would lump them together. Obviously, one is a point guard, one is a center who is really into Disney, but Neto and Lopez are both good, solid veteran options at positions that went wrong for the Cavs last year. Lopez is a much, much better option than Moses Brown if Jared Allen misses time for whatever reason. Moses Brown, who will go down in history now that Bill Russell's number has been retired by league, is the last Cav to ever wear the number 6.
Do you think they make an exception for LeBron if he came back or no?
Do I want to entertain that? No, my brain is already destroyed enough, Evan. I as far as Neto goes, I have skepticism of him recreating the same two-guard Magic Rubio did. But if he is just like a veteran upgrade over what Brandon Goodwin provided, that is fine. They wanted something in this spot where it's clearly we want veterans who have something in the tank and like are more dependable than the guys we had last year. I see no like flaws in the logic of those guys being your depth plays.
No, not at all. And I think Neto obviously has a cleaner path to play to start the season just with Ricky Rubio rehabbing and recovering. But Neto is just – I will always say this. Kevin Pangos could smoke me one-on-one if you wanted to play me, like no doubt in my mind.
Also we're number 6, to be clear.
Also we're number 6. Maybe it's a cursed number. Too bad we'll never have to do a deep dive on that one. But – Kevin Pangos really brought in the reality of the situation with when the Cavs lost Rubio. That's why they scrambled to get Rajon Rondo. And also, I think why they're getting Hollow Neto, because Neto was pretty solid for the Wizards, even though they had to lean on him quite a bit when Brad Beal was out with injury. But like he has a little bit of size, so you can play him at the one or the two. I don't think you're going to necessarily play Garland Neto lineups just because defensively that just doesn't make much sense on paper. It's just not going to have the same bump as Rubio and Garland did. But we've talked about this several times now. If you're a regular listener, you know this. Neto is in kind of a similar vein to Tyus Jones when we were talking about backup point guards, where he will set the table, but he's not going to do too much to disrupt the flow of the offense. But he's not going to do those things that Rubio did. It was just like kind of bombastic at times, where he would just bomb away from three, or he'd have those flashy plays, a little extra spice on them, and just kind of provide you that juice defensively as well. So I think Neto obviously is the cleaner path, but like you said, Moses Brown was fun. He was a fun story for the Cavs, but obviously upgrading with Robin Lopez was the clear and smart move for the Cavs.
Yes. All right, let's end on the two-way guys. I don't have a ton to say here, Evan. Mobley is more interesting to me than Nembhard. I want to see Nembhard get G League time this year to see him play defense, play some off ball, and be in the right role that'll play in the NBA. Mobley, to me, has like a fairly direct path to kind of end up being a potential like Robin Lopez successor a year from now. But I really just want to see them get to play in the G League. Like, that is where I would want them to be.
Yeah, I would too. I think in regards to maybe having a cleaner path to playing, I think Lopez certainly has it. Nembhard, there's a familiarity, but same concerns you have with Stevens and players in that ilk where like they just can't shoot. Like Nembhard went undrafted at a TCU because he just was not really a shooter with the Horned Frogs. But there's something there. He was really, really good during Summer League. He's been very good for the Charge whenever he's played for them. But like there's a clear gulf between playing in the G League and playing in the NBA. And I think Nembhard has slowly bridged that gulf a little bit. But like you said, I think Mobley has just a clearer and cleaner path long-term for the Cavs, where he can kind of be, and he said it during his intro presser, or at least during his summer league presser, where he can be that support piece for his brother, for Jared Allen, even Lauri Markkanen as well long-term, where he can kind of provide you not what they obviously bring you, but like a little bit of everything: playmaking, defense, rebounding, shooting. Like he's aware of who he is and what he is as a player. It's just he needs a runway to develop, and maybe there is something here for the Cavs. And he's very intriguing for me. Like he makes it worthwhile to go to quite a few Charge games to watch him just kind of get 30-35 minutes a night, just to really just get a feel for things out there.
If you had to say, we'll end on this, if you had to just pick one of them to be on the actual 50-man roster a year from now, Mobley or Nembhard? Okay, Mobley. I agree.
Part of it, I think, is his brother playing for this team, but the big part of it is, like, Isaiah Mobley has a very interesting skill set for his size, and there is something there. The more I break down his footage, I'm just like, okay, there could be something fun if the Cavs give him the runway to develop.
Yeah, I don't know if, like, the brother thing has a ton of, just because I think at a certain point, like, that stuff, like it maybe matters, like, a little bit, but, like, I think ultimately, like, we have to just...
Oh, yeah, it's a little, like, over, I'm not trying to blow it up too much, but I'm just saying, like, if you had a gun to my head and say, like, okay, Isaiah Mobley, you could maybe be our break glass in case of emergency big man next year, like, that makes a lot more sense than RJ Nembhard, because also Mobley can shoot, that's the other thing, too, like, he has translatable skills that can make sense at the next level, where Nembhard really needs to iron out a couple wrinkles still.
Yes. All right. That's going to be it for this episode of Locked On Cavs. We'll be back on Monday continuing our summer series of previews. We got some other fun little episodes coming planned up, including a jersey breakdown of all the different Cavs jerseys of all time. And we're going to do one of those either like a draft or like build your own Cavs roster with $15 kind of thing in the coming weeks. So it's going to be a fun time. We're in August. We're getting closer to the season starting, but... you know, not quite there yet as we inch our way towards training camp in the preseason, which we got the schedule announced. You can go read about that if you're the sort of now. All right. Thanks for being Locked On Cavs, your first listen every day. Remember, this episode was produced by Jake Stevens. Shots to Jake. For your second listen, get up to date on the latest news and rumors in the NBA in just 30 minutes every day with Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA is your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. I'm Chris. That's Evan, everyone. Be well. Have a great weekend.